Thank you, Brian, for that introduction, and I want to thank all of you for taking the time to attend today's session. Let me first start by simply asking, when you hear the marketing slogan, live, work, and play, what's the first thing that comes to mind? This is an informal survey. Okay. Anything else? Any certain movements or approaches that come to mind when you hear the term live, work, and play? Okay. Some people may say livable communities. Some people may say smart growth. Some people may say new urbanism. Okay. Well, the reason why I wanted to start there is because that's a very popular marketing slogan now. But it was actually the environmental justice movement that popularized the notion that the environment is where we live, work, and play almost 20 years ago. And so the reason why today's discussion is important and the issues that I'm going to talk about, at least within the span of the next 15 minutes, are important is because proponents for environmental justice and proponents for livable communities share a common interest. The key issue that I just want to acknowledge is that developers and planners have known for quite some time about issues like environmental justice. But the challenge until recently really has been framing, one, how to implement it during the development process, visualizing the product from that process, as well as correcting the misperception that environmental justice may slow down development. And so I'm going to talk about how to address all three of those issues through the framework of equitable development. And so for my remarks, I'm simply defining equitable development as an approach in order to meet the needs of underserved communities through policies and through practices that reduce disparities while fostering places that are healthy and vibrant. And I know that's a bit of an academic way to talk about things, but today the term place-based has become a watchword amongst many who work in fields of planning and in fields of public health. And so in effect, what I'm really going to talk about is a place-based approach for encouraging environmental justice. And many of you will probably know based on this little diagram there's an area of overlap. And so my remarks are going to focus on how do we expand the size of that area of overlap as opposed to splitting it into more pieces, but how do we really expand the size of it? I imagine some of you have probably practiced alternative dispute resolution. You've read the book Getting to Yes. So I'm going to talk about how do we expand the size of the pie. And so normally when I'm asked to offer remarks on this topic, I like to begin by simply stating that history is prologue. And as was shared earlier, I mean, as professionals, many of you have realized that public health at one point was joined at the hip with urban planning. And sometimes I have conversations with my friend Tony DeLucia, and he likes to remind me of that point. And then on occasions, I like to reciprocate. I like to tell him, well, there was one point when city planning was actually connected with social work. And so I'm not going to have the opportunity to go into all of that today, but the point is I just want to emphasize that the International City County Management Association tends to stress that understanding social diversity and responding to social change are actually keys to effective physical planning. They also stress that planning at its best takes into account the social implications of land use and economic development decisions. And so the point in saying all this is really just to emphasize that planning as a profession is not professionally or institutionally separate from the social realm or from the public health realm for that matter. Now the reoccurring theme I just want to note, I just want to acknowledge within planning practice over the span of the past 40 years has actually been how do you deal with the social implications of land use and economic development. I mean, this slide just simply offers a quick listing of programmatic endeavors that have focused on how to really foster a sense of balance in planning and development practice in order to ensure that everyone has a safe and healthy environment in which to live, work, and play. And the approach that has gained traction in recent years is actually equitable development. And PolicyLink has been the main proponent of this approach. Now, incidentally, the points raised by ICMA have also been raised by leaders within the environmental justice community. In 1996, the National Environmental Justice Advisory Council released a report that was entitled The Search for Authentic Signs of Hope. And not only did that report identify the environmental benefits of urban redevelopment, the report also emphasized that the best outcomes would only come about through an inclusive process. And so in hindsight, this report really could be viewed as EPA's first study on the topic of sustainable communities. The other thing that's worth noting is that in 1996, it was quite clear that the NEJAC had formed a very clear urban policy in terms of how to encourage successful approaches towards revitalizing our cities, especially during an era when it was still considered acceptable to subsidize sprawl. And so I'm saying all this because as a planner and as a sociologist, I really believe that there is a nexus between environmental justice, land use, and sustainability. And so if we knew in 1996 what we know now, I really believe that the NEJAC would point to the following examples that I'm going to show as being clear examples for how do we normalize environmental justice in the planning process, as well as meet the goals of public health. So if you had an opportunity to attend last night's American Public Health Association Awards reception, you would know that Robert Garcia is a very strong advocate for the benefits of parks in terms of encouraging physically active lifestyles. In the city of Los Angeles, he's been working as a civil rights attorney and asking the very tough questions of how do we resolve some of the problems in terms of clear disparities in terms of access to parks and open space. In Los Angeles, as with most social disparities, many of the affluent communities within that city have sufficient access to parks. But in lower income communities, there's a deficit in terms of providing adequate access to parks, open space, the services that people need in order to have physically active lifestyles. And so he's been working over the span of the past 10 years in order to address many of these issues. And his group, the City Project, has been effective in terms of leveraging roughly $20 billion in investments in order to direct resources towards helping to resolve these type of disparities by working at the nexus of social justice and sustainable regional planning. Now, as I said earlier, environmental justice is a land use issue, even though it hasn't always been termed or framed as such. But the key point that I want to emphasize here is that because it's a planning issue, there are a broad suite of tools that proponents for environmental justice can actually leverage in order to address the problems associated with the fact that lower income communities may bear a disproportionate burden of pollution. State Representative Harold Mitchell is a force for change in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He actually created the Regenesis Project in 1996 with only a $20,000 grant from EPA's Environmental Justice Small Grants Program. Over the span of the past 10 years, he's turned that $20,000 grant into over $200 million of investment in the Arkwright and Forest Park communities. He's been very effective in helping ordinary citizens to achieve extraordinary outcomes. He worked within that community, within Arkwright and Forest Park, in order to help citizens to clean up two Superfund sites, as well as to help them to manage their vacant properties. And since that period of time, the community residents have been effective in terms of getting new housing, a new $2 million health center, as well as getting a new open space and green space in order to increase the amount of amenity within that area, as well as access to new jobs that were desperately needed within a community that was distressed. And so the key point that I want to emphasize here is that simply with this particular project, Harold is demonstrating how to effectively meet the goals of community planning and environmental justice simultaneously. This particular project was actually one of the stops along a environmental justice tour that was held this past summer that was organized by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as well as the Congressional Black Caucus. And then finally, I just want to note that there is a very strong sense of connection between community health and economic health. Bethel New Life is a faith-based development corporation that's based in the West Garfield neighborhood in Chicago. Several years ago, they worked with residents within that neighborhood in order to retain their transit stop. And many residents within this community understood that they needed transit as their means of access in order to get to work. After all, if you can't work, you can't build wealth, and if you can't build wealth, then you can't contribute to strengthening the local economy. After helping the community in order to retain that transit station, one of the things they did was they worked with residents in order to help them to understand how they could use that transit station as an asset in order to encourage much-needed urban revitalization within a neighborhood that had been long overlooked. And over time, they focused on approaches that were based on encouraging transit-oriented development and green building and brownfields redevelopment. And this project, incidentally, was the recipient of EPA's National Award for Smart Growth Achievement under the category of Equitable Development in 2006. So I'm sharing these particular examples just to show or demonstrate how communities around the country are pushing the envelope, more or less, in terms of sustainability, to make sure that we just don't encourage outcomes that are good for the brick and the mortar, but they're also responsive to the needs of people, that are responsible to the needs of different demographics, that are responsible in a way in which they're sensitive towards the incumbency that have been within many of our communities. So they're expanding the conversation on environmentalism. They're working to encourage outcomes of environmental justice. And the previous examples that I shared aren't the exception. There are a broad number of examples that I could reference within the span of this presentation. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. I mean, the point that I want to make is that approaches in terms of encouraging equitable development are actually complementary to some of the prevailing approaches for encouraging sustainability. And so just as how smart growth is considered to be the sum of its parts, as referenced by these principles that I'm showing on this slide, there is research that would suggest that communities practicing equitable development have the following commonalities. And it's the synergy in terms of how these principles work together that results in places that are healthy, successful, and livable. About 2 weeks ago, I had an opportunity to offer remarks at the School of Architecture at Howard University. And during my remarks, I had an opportunity to share a personal story with students about my time in graduate school, as well as my early years of working in the smart growth arena. And one of the things I said is that I always felt something was missing from the conversation. At the time, I wasn't able to put my finger on it. I wasn't able to quite put it into words, but my training as a sociologist wasn't going to let me rest. Well, the good news is that I eventually became proficient in giving voice to the unspoken. And so that's the abbreviated story for how these principles for equitable development were prepared. And of course, you can see healthy communities is one of the principles of equitable development that I often talk about when I do my lectures and do my research. The key thing that I want to emphasize here, I'm not going to go through all the principles, but equitable, healthy communities simply acknowledges health in the broadest sense of the word. In the sense of beyond just focusing on wellness, we're also concerned about communities that encourage physically active lifestyles, where the goals of environmental justice are actually met, where residents have access to nutritious food, as well as where there's a clear sense of safety within such places. Now, as I transition to the second half of my remarks, I believe there are two key points that I need to emphasize at this point. The first being, if we're going to encourage a healthier, more prosperous future, then we're going to have to do more in order to penetrate untapped audiences. Specifically, it means we need to connect with those who have, in the past, been underrepresented in terms of environmental decision-making. The second point that I need to make is simply the fact that there's a lot of untapped talent that we can leverage in order to encourage sustainable communities. And in my role as a public servant, one of the key things that I've learned about equitable development is not the fact that it's not difficult to encourage. It simply requires us to stretch a little bit. And actually, the city of Gary, Indiana, is going through the process of doing a little bit of stretching by encouraging equitable development as a central feature of its approach towards redevelopment. As I shared this last example, the one thing that I want to note is that in 2007, the city of Gary, the local empowerment zone, as well as the Department of Minority Studies at Indiana University Northwest, approached the planning in the Black Community Division because they wanted help with framing a vision for their Broadway corridor. They asked us to work with residents, and the analysis zone for the project actually included the city's downtown and part of the city's Midtown district. And Midtown represented the heart of Gary's African-American community. Midtown is a place that captures the affection of local residents. There's some important buildings that were designed by African-American architects that are within that district. VJ Records, which was a record company that had the distribution rights for the Beatles, is based in Midtown, and the building for VJ Records still stands. The other thing that's worth noting is simply the fact that Gary's distinctive jazz and blues sound was prominent within the Midtown district. So I'm sharing all this simply to emphasize the fact that Midtown is a place that captures the affection of local residents. And so citizens in Gary understand the importance of encouraging livable and sustainable communities, but they also wanted to send a clear message that the means to getting there was going to be just as important as the end. And so eventually we had a three-day technical assistance exercise in Gary, Indiana, where we focused on striking a balance between encouraging development, protecting the sense of place, and positioning citizens so that they could guide the change process rather than react to it. Of course, outcomes are the most important part of any technical assistance exercise. I'm not going to go through all of these, but there are three things I want to emphasize here. First, this project was no small undertaking. We went to Gary with only a $5,000 grant from EPA's Brownfields program, and we leveraged over $100,000 in technical support for the city of Gary. The second thing that's worth noting is the fact that this vision is now public policy. In June of this year, the city of Gary voted to amend their comprehensive plan to include this vision in its entirety. And then lastly, it's just worth noting that this project recently received a commendation from the American Planning Association for contributions to the planning profession. Now, the reason why it's worth talking about this project at a public health conference is simply because of the fact that many people would suggest that health is as much of a spiritual matter as it is physical. And I know we don't always talk about spiritual health within professional settings, but there is a clinical term for spiritual health, and it's simply called morale. It's what the French call esprit de corps. And so leaders within the environmental justice arena, within the faith-based sector, and groups like the Planning and the Black Community Division have known for quite some time that if we want to encourage communities that are whole, we have to be sensitive towards meeting the needs of people as well as focusing on bricks and mortar. And so with this project, we focused on leveraging and advancing the goals of physical, social, and human capital. The other thing that's worth noting about this project is that the success of it wasn't based on the community's level of investment. Instead, the success was actually based on our commitment as practitioners in order to frame a vision that would help position residents to be proactive and responsible rather than reactive and emotive. And so with that, I just want to conclude by acknowledging and simply emphasizing that concepts like equitable development aren't aspirational. They're not pie in the sky. They're not wishful thinking. The reality is that there are a broad number of different examples that demonstrate the application of this approach. And so the key thing that I do want to emphasize here is that in my role as a planner and as a sociologist, I am not in the business of only encouraging sustainability. I am in the business of giving sustainability a much needed push. And so based on that premise, I believe that healthy things grow, including our paradigms for sustainability. And so with that, I just want to acknowledge that if we are flexible enough to allow the paradigm of sustainability to account for social equity or social justice or even encouraging equitable development, then we can encourage a sense of parity within our communities. And so I want to thank you all for indulging me. I appreciate your patience. And if you're interested in learning more on this topic, then I would like to direct your attention to the current issue of Sustain magazine. And so thank you very much. I appreciate it.